Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Monday, January 15th, 2018. This is your second daily dose of happy at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And it's been an exciting weekend, Wendy. I mean, exciting in a number of different ways because we hit a new target. We are now at 15,000 plays since November of 2016. I didn't think we were going to hit that for ages, and all of a sudden now we've hit it. We're making tremendous strides with the book that we're working on. We now have 30 co-authors there. I mean, it's just like one thing after another is happening. I'm getting excited. I don't know about you.
I know. I think I need to quit my day job just so I can jump in and part of everything we're doing.
Well, maybe
not. Wait, I want to do that because I want to go back to my entrepreneurial route.
There you go. Yeah. Well, maybe not quite yet, but we're certainly on that path. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And I love the enthusiasm, too, that I've been getting from the co-authors, because as we find more and more coaches who want to jump in and do this, I mean, the enthusiasm is just fantastic. Of course, I guess I might expect that because they're all LOA coaches. But even so, I mean, people are really psyched about doing this. So it's really good. Which kind of ties into the topic for the day, too, because the topic is co-creation. And it's actually not a topic, believe it or not, that we've done before on LOA Today. So we're kind of breaking ground on that. Yeah, never done it before. But it's
wow.
It's like we're long past due, I think. But anyway, have you had any wins this past weekend? Anything really good happening? Anything exciting or fun or anything like that?
Well, last night I rewatched the DVD of The Secret.
Oh, really?
Because,
okay,
you know, you said that was something that was very life-changing in your world. And, you know, I don't know if I ever watched it or if I had. It had been so long ago I didn't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I know I read the book.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, I'm going to watch it. And I was pleasantly surprised at how many things inspired me where I'd think to myself, oh, yeah, that's a really valid point. And I don't know that I've been using that little technique.
Ah, okay. Well, that's good. That's really
good. And then there had been a number of Abraham clips that I'd listened to over the weekend from YouTube. And put the two together, I just got so inspired to, you know, try some new things. Like, I'll tell you this one that it kind of surprised me. I think I have been, in a way, sitting on my laurels and not taking bigger risks. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, risks that are stupid, but like setting a target for something that I want to create in my life just because I want to, because I have some targets I'd like to do, and that was something I got from The Secret when they would say, so what is it you want? What do you desire? And I thought, you know, I don't ask myself that question very often.
Mm.
I just kind of go about life and whatever life, you know, provides for me, that kind of is the catalyst for, you know, new stuff.
Yeah.
But I went, what do I want? And so I started thinking of something that I wanted, and it was pretty big and pretty outside of, you know, what's happening right now. And I asked myself, is there any reason I can't ask for that, or you know, do I believe it's possible? And I thought, you know, I have such a powerful belief in the law of attraction, knowing that if I focus on something continually, with intensity, because it's fun to do so, because what I'm wanting is fun, there would be absolutely no reason in the world it can't be manifested.
That's true.
I mean, I know this sounds like so basic, but I went, you know what? I want to test myself, and I want to test the law of attraction just for the fun of doing it, and in the meantime, get some really outstanding outcome in my life. And I'm like, okay, so I started last night, and then this morning as I was, you know, waking up to the alarm, I started focusing on my new intention, and I went, this is easy. This is easy. So we'll see how I go. Well, no, I don't want to say that. That sounds like I don't even believe in myself. No,
yeah.
This is going to happen. I set a target. Remember one time we did a show where we talked about deadlines?
Yeah.
And how when you set a deadline, it, you know, it's kind of arbitrary.
Right.
So I set a deadline by the end of June.
Oh, okay.
For something to manifest. And I thought, well, let's see, because I was the one who was saying, yeah, deadlines are not always so cool unless you have a really solid reason you have to have a deadline. But I'm going to do it.
No,
I'm going to make it happen. I'm going to prove to myself it's possible.
I can't remember. Did The Secret propose the idea and promote the idea of using deadlines?
No. Nope.
It didn't. Oh, okay. So that's just something you decided to latch on to.
That's something I decided to, because I have something in my life that I want to see happen around a certain time. Like, I want it sooner rather than later. And I felt like that was enough time to let me get more on board and enough time for all the coordinating components to be orchestrated.
That's
while
good.
At the same time, not so far out that I would, like, not do anything about it because, I got time.
Yeah. So basically, in other words, you made it believable for yourself. And by making it believable, you could increase your confidence level.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well,
and I'm really excited by it because, you know, honestly, I haven't done this in a long time. I think most of the time when I have set a target for something that I wanted to create, it was out of need or out of, oh, my God, I feel so desperate to have this thing in my life. And, of course, those are the ones that are
right.
hardest to, like, get yourself out of it.
Oh, of course.
And I went, this is just for the fun of doing it.
That's very cool because, as Abraham talks about, it's all about the fun. Every reason that we're here is tied to the fun, the enjoyment, the enthusiasm, the excitement of being here and creating and co-creating and just living and enjoying life. I keep thinking about the fact that when you read behind and between the lines of what Abraham has to tell us, this is it. This is the place. I mean, people who are in the non-physical, their attention's focused. It's riveted here because this is the leading edge. This is where it's all happening. And so when you're here, you really want to take advantage of it. So I love your experiment. I think it's a great one. I think it's fantastic. I'm sure it's going to manifest.
Well, and what feels so good about it is that this feels like, even though it's a bigger thing than I've ever purposely worked on before, it feels like a baby step in comparison to where I know I want to go.
Mm.
And that's why I, like, chunked off just this one piece with a short ramp-up time period.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I feel confident that once this manifests, the things that I'm going to start asking for after that are going to be like 10x.
Wow. All right.
I kind of sense this is me getting my feet wet and kind of moving into a new direction where I just, like, the phrase is shoot the wad. I'm going for the big stuff.
All right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so here's another one. This is... I guess we'll put it in the win bucket.
Okay.
It was a new awareness.
Oh.
And again, this kind of came from The Secret and my listening to Abraham this weekend. What I'm going to say right up front is going to sound kind of weird, and then I'll explain.
Okay.
I'm bored with being happy.
Okay. I never thought I'd hear that one, but okay.
Well, I didn't think I'd hear it either, but I hear other people around me talking about being passionate and exciting and enthused.
Ah.
And I'm like, you know, I get that every now and then, but I've been doing happy for a lot of years now, and I'm like, I'm ready for the next thing, something that's bigger than happy. Actually, for me, is now in a content zone where it's so easy for me to manifest happy because I've been practicing it for so many years that happy is kind of my default position. It's kind of my emotional set point.
Mm-hmm.
I can do happy anytime I want for the most part. And I'm like, but I want ecstatic.
Mm.
I want juicy. I want passionate. I want alive, vital, exciting, where it's like bigger. So I went, all right, that's my new thing. I'm going to start focusing on bigger, better, bolder, more passionate and exciting things. That's what I want my life to be filled with.
You don't want just the steak. You want the sizzle.
I like that word. Yeah, I want sizzle.
Sizzle.
Because, you know, there's nothing like when you go to a restaurant and you hear the waitress coming by with, like, some sizzling fajitas.
Oh, yeah.
Get all of your senses engaged.
And fajitas are just, like, full of sound and smell and sizzle.
Yes.
And they're coming to the table. You know, if you ordered them, you know when they're coming. There's absolutely no doubt about when the meal is coming.
And that's what I want in my life. I want all my senses engaged because I don't feel like they have been for a while.
Okay.
And what's really fascinating is writing my story, which I submitted to you yesterday for our book.
Which is fantastic,
actually,
by the way. I won't share it with the readership and the listenership yet, but let me tell you, this is going to be in the book and you're going to love it. It's an excellent story.
Well, thank you. And in the writing of it, and then, you know, rereading it and proofing, I inspired myself.
Really?
And I realized that that story has so many juicy bits and pieces that it kind of reminded me of how I lived my life, because now that story was written when I didn't know about the law of attraction.
Mm.
But it allowed me to see how law of attraction is constantly at work, and I can certainly see in hindsight where, knowing what I know today, if I was setting a target for what I set for in my chapter, I think it would go a lot smoother.
Mm,
yeah. But what I do remember is how much, confidence. I had such a powerful confidence that even when something negative occurred where I thought I wasn't going to be able to manifest the outcome that was really important to me, it was like everything inside of me just pulled together and said, oh no, this is happening. One way or another, don't know how, but it is happening. Like, kind of like failure is not an option.
Right. Oh, yeah. That came through loud and clear in the story, too. I mean, again, I don't want to give anything away about the story, but I will say that the story is basically a tale of how you were manifesting something, and at the last second it fell through, and to be followed by something even better, which fell through, to be manifested by something else, and then something really bad happened, and then something else fell through, and at the end what you end up with was just beyond your wildest dreams. It was an amazing story. Just amazing.
And what I really reconnected with, Walt, while I was writing and, like I said, proofing it, was that feeling of passion, that I had such a dogged determination that I knew what I wanted, and I'll be darned if anything was going to get in my way from making that happen.
Mm.
And that felt so exciting to me that I went, I want that feeling in my life again. I want to have more of those experiences where I feel that level of certainty of whatever it takes, I'm going to do it. And especially knowing, because I know what I know about law of attraction is in our lives, and when you understand it, the flow and the ease of things coming into your existence is so pleasant. It's so fun. But there's still the little nooks and crannies of you don't know how it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I found really, really interesting in the writing was, you know how they say the joy is in the journey?
Yep.
Well, the twists and turns and the rush that came with each thing where I got the next something and I got the next something, like riding the wave, it's like each one of those pieces felt like such an incredible rush that when I came to the end, I'm like, I got to rewrite the end because the end is really kind of boring. It's anticlimactic to me when I got what I asked for. And I went, oh, that's why Abraham talks about the joys in the journey.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you get to the destination, that's only exciting for a really short, finite period of time. And if you don't have something to look forward to around the corner, you kind of go, huh, well, got that. Now what?
Yeah, sure. And I know exactly what you're talking about. I wrote a novel one time, and it had a lot of action sequences in it. And when I was getting to the action sequence parts, it was like I couldn't write the words down fast enough. The ideas were flowing so quickly in my mind, and I'm a fast typist, that literally my fingers could not keep up. And the exhilaration that went with that was just off the chart. So I know that feeling. I'm not sure if I could convey it accurately to our listeners so that they could really get it. But the closest I can think of is imagine going to, say, Disneyland and riding one of the really, really big rides, and you're exhilarated by the time you come through it. Then multiply that by 10, and you'll get a taste of what it's like. Because that's pretty much it.
Well,
I mean, it's just like riding a ride.
I know. I went to a theme park a number of years ago, and it was this roller coaster that's at an 80-degree angle going down.
Okay, I'm getting sick to my stomach already.
Okay, I love roller coasters. And it's the kind of thing where your body is no longer connected to the back of your seat. That's why you have those really powerful bars in front of you.
Yeah.
And the rush going down that thing was so fantastic that, you know, we stood in line for 2 hours to do this 90-second ride. And as soon as it was over, me and my friends and everyone, let's do it again.
And
we got back in line for another 2 hours. And we did the 90 seconds so we could feel that rush that was so exhilarating. And we went, okay, let's do it again. did, and we did it three times. So we were 6 hours in line for this ride three times. It was
good. That is funny. I
believe that's the level of excitement that is available to us, and I had forgotten.
I don't think you've forgotten for long.
Pardon me?
I don't think you've forgotten for long, that's for sure, because the way you're talking right now, it's going to be happening again real soon. Mm.
Well, it's an interesting thing. My life had gotten so good. I had been working so diligently in order to get to the point where I was living in ease and flow. I worked so diligently to get to the point where happiness is a natural state of being for me. I work so hard to get to the point where well-being abounds and I'm thriving and things are good. And, okay, now I'm there. And my questions yesterday were, and now what?
Mm.
If I don't have the next dream, the next something to shoot for, kill me now.
The good news is there is always the next. The next dream always does come. That's the good news, fortunately. Otherwise, you're right, it would be a little bit edgy. But I totally get it, though, because you want that next one, especially when you've just had your appetite thoroughly whetted with something really good before that. You just want to have more of it. And that's what's so fun about being alive. I mean, people often wonder, what's my purpose in life? I think Abraham described it really well. Your purpose is to come here and just love life and enjoy doing the creating and enjoy being a creator and being a co-creator and just involve yourself in every aspect of life. And that's why the other side, that's why the non-physical have their attention on us, because this is where it's at. This is the great stuff. And we don't want to miss any of the opportunity. We want to give ourselves as much of the opportunity as we know how to give. So, yeah.
So I'm jumping back in, 2 feet in,
all right.
And I'm wanting to put my hands in the clay. And what that looks like for me is by focusing on what I want and finding the feeling place that's exhilarating to me. And I started to tap into some of that this morning while I was laying in bed. And I'm like, oh, this is really good.
Nice.
So,
yeah.
That's what I'm with.
Well,
I'm purposely not sharing what it is because, you know, I'm pretty transparent and I'll tell anybody almost anything. But I'm purposely not sharing it because right now it's in a very fetus-like position for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to spend some time letting my dream grow to a point that it feels solid enough. And when it feels really solid, then it'll feel okay to talk about.
Sure.
But it's like I don't want anybody else's thoughts, opinions, judgments, or considerations to even energetically influence what I'm working on because it's still a baby.
Well, plus we got to keep giving our listeners an opportunity and a reason to keep listening until June because, you know... You got to keep coming back so you can find out, well, what was it? How did it work out?
Oh, and trust me, once as it's moving and grooving, I will start to share. I won't be able to help myself. I know that.
That much I do know about you. We've only been working together a little under 2 months, but I know that much about you, very much so.
What? I'm that transparent that I just share everything?
Well, you share a lot, let's put it that way. I'm not sure that you share everything, and it's probably not a good idea to share everything, but you share a lot, and that shows a tremendous degree of openness. It's fantastic. So anyway, co-creation.
Okay.
Co-creation is that, well, first of all, that's one of those words when I first heard it, I said, what? What's that? What's co-creation? Creation, I heard of. Co-creation? What's this? But it turns out that co-creation is kind of what it sounds like. It's two or more beings getting together and creating together. And when you think about it, all of the best projects involve somebody else in your project, including writing, by the way. Because like when I was writing my novel, my sister was my co-creator, my primary co-creator. My wife was also a major co-creator with me. And it's useful, it's helpful to have that other viewpoint to bring in when you're writing, especially. So, I mean, co-creation takes place in all areas of life, but it's where that journey becomes juicy. It's where we get a lot of the sizzle because we're doing it with somebody else, somebody who has a different perspective, different point of view, enough similarity that we can be, you know, carrying on the conversation, so to speak. But, I mean, it's like, you know, you and I and the others doing the podcast together, right? I mean, it's a whole lot more fun to co-create it than just to create it by ourselves. I've tried doing the other kind, creating by yourself. Let me tell you, it's a lot of work. This is fun. This is just a blast. And it's even just, it's just gold that it's also great for the listeners and it's fun for the listeners to listen to. But to me, that's the gravy on top. The fun part is the co-creative part. Not about you, but.
Well, and you know, I was thinking, I don't know that anything in life can be done in a silo, solo. Even if you as a human feel like you're doing it by yourself, the very fact that law of attraction is the law, it is always matching you with thoughts, with things, etc. So it's like there's nothing we can do that the law of attraction isn't a part of. So even in that respect, we're co-creating with the universe on a continual, regular basis.
This is true. And plus, when you add in the fact that the moment you start thinking about stuff and the vibration, it comes close to matching somebody else who's got similar thoughts going on, boom, they show up in your life. So it's not like you can really avoid it. You know, like, oh, I think I'll just live like a hermit in the mountains. You know, even there, you're going to have somebody dropping by sometime. It's just the nature of things.
Well, and, you know, we've all heard of, like, throw a pebble in water and there's that ripple effect. It's like there's nothing that we do that doesn't affect something or someone because all energy touches all energy, and so there's always motion.
Yeah, sure. I mean, motion.
So here's the,
well, go ahead.
Go ahead.
We got to stop doing that.
Really, you go ahead.
Motion is like the key word that's involved. Activity might be another way of describing it. Co-creation is about activity and involving others. And any activity that I've ever thought of, that I've ever attempted, where there has been somebody else involved, is 10 times, 100 times more satisfying. Doesn't matter what it is. I mean, I can remember when I was a kid, I was actually one of the few kids as a kid who liked to, you know, practice the piano. There weren't too many of us. I was a rare duck, and I was teased for it accordingly. But I enjoyed playing the piano, and I enjoyed, you know, trying to get better at it and so forth. But the one thing that
your teacher loved the fact that you practiced and loved to play.
Well, she wanted me to practice more, to be perfectly honest. But I did better than most students because I was actually willing to do some practicing. But you know, when I think about it, I realize that the times that were the best were when either I was working with her, or actually there was also a male teacher, so with either the piano teachers, or when I was later on in life, when I was playing in bands. In fact, I actually didn't play piano in bands. I wish I had, but unfortunately I didn't have the money for a $2,500 electric piano in the 1970s. And 1970s prices, that was a lot of money. So it was not really an option, but I ended up playing guitar for the longest time. But even with that, the very earliest playing that I did was with a friend of mine who I reconnected with just a few years ago. We hadn't seen each other since high school, but we used to play out. We used to jam together all the time, and it was great because music became a way to talk with somebody else. I mean, literally, if you're playing a guitar and your buddy's playing a guitar and you're playing it together and you're learning how to jam, how to really merge the tune, the tones together and so forth, you're carrying on a conversation with each other, at least if it's a good jam, if it's somebody who, you know, you really connect with. And that's what he and I would do. We were just, I can't say we were making up the tunes because we were doing covers. We were playing, you know, the music of, you know, people who were popular at the time. But the way that we did them was very much unique to our individuals, to our individual takes on how to play music. And I mean, literally just something as simple as one person playing chords and the other person playing lead and then switching off. That alone is a kind of dialogue. It's like you're sending little messages to the other person and then he sends the message back and so forth. So co-creation is awesome. It's just an awesome way of doing things.
I mean, I remember years ago in a similar vein, my best friend, he played piano and we both sang, and to me there was nothing more fun than him working on a new piece that he was writing, and he would just say, just work on any harmonies you can think of and let's just see where it'll take us.
Mm.
And that was so fun.
Yeah.
Because we were creating, I mean, I wasn't writing the piece, that was his baby, but if he would just put out some chords and start singing a little bit of something and I could harmonize to it, it's like then that would kind of energize him. And all of a sudden in his mind, he could hear, oh, I know where this can go.
Right.
And I was mesmerized by his talent, and I just felt fortunate that I could even play in that arena with him, you know, and that I could sing because then I could harmonize. And we would just have so much fun. And no two sessions together were ever the same. You know,
I can tell.
That was a co-creation. That was just incredibly awesome.
Just from that story, I can tell you he enjoyed it just as much as you did. The fact that you guys were saying, like, not every session was different. They were all, they had their own unique personalities. I can't remember exactly how you said it, but that's the gist of it. That's when it's great. It doesn't really matter if the other person you're doing with doesn't have tons of talent. As long as they have just enough talent to go with what you're doing, and you're kind of the leader and they're following, but you're doing a dance, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I mean, dancing can be wonderful. And I mean both real dancing and the kind of dancing you do when you're creating music. They're both terrific. I remember a dance partner I had back when I was doing dancing on a regular basis. And with this partner, she and I could just communicate through dance. We invented steps that didn't exist.
Cool.
I mean, we would just start, and it was just go with the music and go with the flow and just read each other and feel each other and feel how it was going and then just do it. And just, you know, okay, time for a turn. We do a turn because it was time to do the turn, not because we planned it. It was wonderful. It was just, I mean, it's the best way to dance. Best way to dance. And it's the best way to do anything, really, when you partner with somebody, when you co-create, when you're both in the moment, in the now, focusing on the thing that you're doing together, and then all kinds of stuff comes out, and you let it out. That's the other thing. You have to let it out, right? You have to allow it to come through, because otherwise it doesn't work too well. It has to be allowed to come through.
A co-creation that has always been exciting to me, but it's not my talent, is like big musicals. I remember in high school writing a term paper on the making of musicals, and I had showcased Rodgers and Hammerstein and Lerner and Lowe. And one would be a lyricist, and one would be the musician that would put the music to the words.
Right.
And that in itself to me is so fascinating. You know, because in some cases the music came first, in some cases the lyrics came first. But the fact that they could do it together, but they weren't doing it necessarily like in the same room.
Oh, no, not
like
necessarily.
One person might go, here's the lyrics, okay, now write the music.
Right.
How they managed to do that and create such incredible stuff was just beyond reasoning to me, and that's why it was so exciting for me to research and write about. Because I was enthralled.
Sure.
Absolutely enthralled. Because I knew their finished works going, how do you do that?
Some of the best stuff that's ever been written was written in teams like that with a lyricist and a songwriter. I mean, more recently, Elton John and Bertie Taupin come to mind. And you're right. Very often, I mean, most often I would say Elton just came up with some stuff and gave it to Bernie, and then Bernie came up with lyrics for it. But there were times when it was the other way around. And that happens simply because you've gotten the feel for each other. You have a sense of how the other person thinks musically. Not just how they think, but how they think musically. So that you know, if I can just put together this much of the framework and give this much to the other person, they'll fill in the rest. And that's a really confident place to be in.
Because everything is energy. Everything at its roots is energy. I wonder how much of those type of co-creative experiences where we're talking about music and lyricists, I wonder how much of that is actually done on an unseen level that happens energetically. And the reason I say that is because I remember when I was married, like right after we were dating, or maybe even while we were dating, I remember my husband pointing out this one car that had just been, you know, it came off the showroom floor. I don't remember anything about it except it was red. And he showed it to me, and he said, Wendy, I designed that. Now, my husband was in the IT field, so I didn't know what he was referring to, because I knew he didn't work on a, like, car assembly line. He wasn't an architect of a vehicle. Now, he loved cars, but he said, no, I have a picture that where I drew this car that we're looking at right now. He goes, I drew it It's the exact same make. It's the same type of model. It's the same headlights. It's the same shape of the trunk and the hood. And, I mean, he was going into all these details. And he's like, I can't believe somebody else created my car.
Mm. Yeah.
And that was just kind of something we talked about for quite some time. And the more I understood things from a metaphysical perspective having to do with energy, I connected to this idea because I think I had heard it on an audio cassette or something like that, where once an idea is birthed and you start, and not even if you talk about it, but even more so if you talk about it, that energy is available to all of us. And so I started to learn about how somebody in the United States, let's say in the medical field, might come up with some really radically aggressive way to, you know, like totally eliminate some disease. And while they're working on it, all of a sudden somebody in France gets the same idea.
Oh, yeah.
And somebody in Russia gets the same idea. And someone in China gets the same idea. And it's something that's kind of, I think, common with scientists, that they almost race to the finish line because they know that if they're thinking it, someone else is too. And they want to be the first to the, you know, saying, hey, we did it, so they can get it patented.
Right.
But it's really fascinating to think how somebody in the States and somebody in France who are not talking, they're not colleagues, nothing, are all of a sudden creating almost the identical something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the only way I can think of that makes sense, that those kinds of, quote, synchronicities or coincidences happen, is because once a thought is thought, energetically it now exists.
That's right.
In the totality of all energy.
Yes. I agree completely. In fact, there's a story that has occurred within the last year. Most people aren't aware of it, although it affects literally everybody on Earth, which is kind of interesting. It turns out that there has been a flaw in the way that Intel computer chips are designed. And, of course, Intel computer chips run like most of the computers in the world, right? Well, this flaw was discovered by three different groups of security IT experts. Your ex-husband's IT background is what made me think of it. Three different groups discovered this thing within about 3 or 4 months of each other, after it had existed for 20 years without anybody in the non-security, non-NSA world, let's put it that way, the non-spy world, discovering it. Now, we're all pretty sure that the NSA and the equivalents of the other countries already knew about it and were exploiting it. But the public certainly didn't know, and the IT public, so to speak, didn't know about it until just this past year. But three different groups all discovered it within like a 3 or 4 month period of each other, and they all reported it to Intel, and then they found out through Intel that the others had also discovered it. So it was the same kind of thing, and the fact that it took 20 years, I think, is really proof positive that it was the vibration of the thought that set the whole thing off, because one person had a thought, and the article that I saw told it from the perspective of, I think it was the second group that found out about it. And they found out about it after somebody at Google was the first one to find out about it. And this group talks about, they were interviewed individually, there were like two or three members of the group, they each had this niggling feeling about an aspect of the code they're reading about regarding that chip. And they were reading about it in the context of some other project they were working on. But there was just something about it that was just bugging them in their minds, and they didn't know what it was. So one day they just sat down and started messing with it and discovered there was this gigantic security flaw. Well, it was just months after the same thing had happened at Google, and the Google rep, the Google technician had discovered the same kind of thing. You can't tell me that one wasn't connected to the other. Of course they were. Where did the niggling thing come from?
Right.
Where else could it have come from?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I mean, that to me, ever since my husband had the thing with somebody else just stole my car idea.
Yeah.
You know, by the way, he didn't like my explanation as a plausible explanation, because of course he wanted to like work with a car manufacturer and have his design actually, you know, manufactured, and now it had already happened.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the ship had sailed. but you know, that opened my mind to understanding co-creation on a universal level.
Yeah.
in a really cool synchronistic way, because if somebody here in the States is thinking about some idea of, you know, how to help global warming or how to make us more green in our efforts towards something, I feel pretty confident that we're not the only ones working on something. But if we start talking about the ideas, those ideas will be picked up by those who have matching interests in other places. You know, and I love knowing that. It's like sometimes I want to just have as much of an original thought as is even possible, because Abraham says there's no such thing as an original thought. But I do know that we expand the universe because we have new thoughts, so I'm not quite sure where all that works. But I'd love to have new ideas where I'm like, wow, nobody has, I've never heard anybody talk about this. And then I start thinking on it, and I start sharing it with my friends. And then the next thing we know, and it could take a year or two, all of a sudden we'll find, oh, somebody else somewhere else has been actually working on that. Or maybe they started thinking about it around the same time that I came up with this idea. You know, but maybe it wasn't something where I had the expertise to, like, send it to market. But one of the things that I have started practicing is, if I come up with an idea, especially for an invention, that I really would wish somebody would invent, but it's not in my skill set to do so, I start talking about it with the intention that somebody who has the skill set will pick it up, pick up those thoughts and actually make it for me.
Right. Sure. It'll happen.
Like, you want to hear my one as of late?
Okay. Yeah, tell us.
So I've said it before. I know I live in Texas, but I don't like the heat at all. And so I kind of hibernate during the summer. And fortunately, I have a great air conditioner in both my car and my house, so I kind of, like, just deal with the heat momentarily until I get into my car, and then I deal with it momentarily until I get to the grocery store and that kind of thing. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool if there was some kind of an air cooling system that was mobile that could literally walk with me, where I'd be in, like, a air-conditioned tunnel, if you will, and it could be holographic, I have no idea. But something that the moment I walk outside the door, I flip a switch, and that air conditioner goes with me till I get in the car, and then I flip it off. And then as soon as I get out of my car, I flip it back on, and I go into whatever public building. Or let's say I'm going to an outdoor sporting event. I haven't been to one of those in ages in the summer because I don't like the heat. But I sure would love to attend. But if somebody created an invention where I could enjoy the sporting event when it's 103 degrees out in Texas, and I could feel cool and comfortable, I'd be in heaven.
Well, I have a
so
name for
it. I want someone to create that for me.
I have a name for it. Let's just call it Mr. Bubble, because it's a bubble that surrounds you, an AC bubble, right?
Could be. I don't know if it blows at me, if it comes down to me, if it's something I wear. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like, it's not my even desire to want to figure out the how. I just know the end result. I want to be cool when I'm outside in Texas.
Actually, now that I think about it, Mr. Bubble is also a toy where you can make bubbles, so we got to change it to Sir Bubble or something like that.
But, you know, there's things like landscaping. I'd love to be outside putting my hands in the dirt, planting flowers, and doing things like that anytime I want, versus, like, right now I have to wait until there just happens to be an unseasonably cool, breezy night before the sun's gone down for me to actually go outside where I can handle being out in the heat. So
okay.
I want someone to create this for me. Now, this is co-creation. I'm putting it out there. I'm not even saying I want any money for the invention, but I want to buy it.
At the very least, you want the benefit of it, that's for sure. And quite so, reasonably so, I might add.
Well, and because I understand that everything's done through co-creation and that energy is the vibrational thing behind all thoughts, I have been purposely putting out thoughts such as this, saying, okay, someone grab a hold of this one and figure it out, send it to market so that I can, like, press buy now on my computer.
Yeah, it's where you want the Staples Easy button, right? You just push easy and boom, it shows up. Love it. Yeah.
So,
yeah, why not?
That's a co-creation that I'm willing to be the creator of the idea, because the best ideas come from a need, to fulfill a need. So this would fulfill a need that I have greatly, because, you know, I plan on living to at least 108, and I don't know where I'm going to be on this planet, if I'm going to stay in the hot Texas sun or if I'm going to be somewhere else. But mm-hmm. if I'm going to be anywhere that's warm at all, I want it to cool down for me.
By the way, you mentioned 108 before as your target age. I just wanted to let you know my great-grandmother lived to 108.
I know, you told me, and that gave me the evidence that it's very doable.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if I told you that. Yeah, it's very doable. I mean, it's so doable that the year of her 100th birthday, she served us lunch, which was really just great. I mean,
wow,
have a 100-year-old lady serve you lunch. That's just amazing.
Well, do you remember Anne Marie from the Dick Van Dyke Show?
Yeah, sure. Which I'm now showing my age by saying that, but yeah.
But she just passed the other day at the age of 94.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
And she just went to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And somebody came to see if she was okay, and she wasn't breathing anymore. And I went, that's the best way to go. She has a website, and her daughter was talking about what a wonderful life she had. And I went, that's so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that.
Yeah.
You know, and I love hearing about other stories where people have made their transition with such an incredible ease that all they did was went to sleep.
Well, that's one of the big benefits of studying the law of attraction, because when you not only study it, but practice it and learn how to apply it in your own life, you enable yourself to do exactly that kind of thing. You make it possible for you to live the life the way you want to live it, with the energy you want to live it, for as long as you want to live it, and then transition the way you want to. It becomes entirely in your control, which is terrific, I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, before we go any further, I was actually going to do this about 20 minutes ago, but you were doing so well, I didn't want to interrupt you. So I just want to take a co-creative moment and remind people who are listening, you're not the only one who might be enjoying this. I mean, you have friends who might be enjoying this as well, if they only knew about it. So we're just asking you to take a moment and send them a message and say, you got to check out this show about co-creation, because this is something that we all crave in life, and hearing something that is, you know, such a positive message like you get out of LOA today, every single day, twice a day, is, you know, that's beneficial to everybody, because we're all trying to raise our vibrations, right? We're all trying to get to a happier place. Well, what better way to give the gift of happiness than by giving it to a friend? So send out a message and help them be co-creators as well.
Great idea.
So, okay.
You know, there's so many different ways through technology that we can share it with others.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, some will do it on social media.
Oh, yeah.
If there are some listeners that maybe they're not quite so tech savvy, they could go to loatoday.net and copy the URL and stick it in the email.
Absolutely.
And send it to someone.
Make it simple.
Click on this link. You'll love it.
Yeah, put it into a text message. I mean, you can certainly click on links in text messages. No, not a problem. And it's a great way to do it as well, too. I mean, there's lots of ways to do it. There's so many ways to do it. That's the beauty of living in the technical age, the age of technological explosion. My goodness. The number of ways you can share stuff is just off the charts. It's crazy. And I have to be perfectly honest, it enables me and the other co-hosts to continue to do our co-creation, because I love this. This is fun. I have so much fun doing this. I know you guys do too. And I just want to keep doing it. I want more and more people to benefit from it. So you're also helping me. So thank you for the help when you decide to share, because that's really good stuff. I suppose
so. LOA is not done in a bubble. LOA,
that's right,
is done with the co-creation, because if we didn't have people who are listening, we wouldn't be expanding our reach.
Oh, yeah.
And now where our co-creation is really getting big, because we have so many more people who are listening and are adding their thoughts. And even if they don't call in, they're still adding their thoughts. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if some of the days when you and I come up with topics, or the other co-hosts come up with topics, it's because one of our listeners had a big question and went, gosh, I wish somebody would talk about this. And then one of us picks up that signal and go, hey, I got a topic for today.
Yeah, absolutely. That can definitely happen. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if it happens a lot.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's more there's a little bit more directness if somebody were to email you at walt at LOAtoday.net.
Well, sure, hey, yeah.
Why don't you talk about blah, blah, blah?
Well, however, feel free. I mean, by all means, if you do want us to talk about something, or if you have a question, or you just want to share a story, by all means, send an email in. We love that. The direct approach is great.
Right. And if you want to be indirect, just be really clear with what you want, and then one of us will pick it up through the ethers.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, it's true. It's true. Something else I wanted to bring up, and I hope it didn't fly out of my head. I had it. I was trying to hold on to it, and then you're going into this great thing there, and I'm just hoping I didn't lose it.
Co-creation.
Oh, I know what it was. I know what it is. Not only is there a lot of co-creation going on with the show between the listeners and the co-host, and among the co-hosts as well, because everybody brings a lot to the table, but I got to tell people, I mean, you listeners aren't going to be seeing this in the next few days, but certainly by mid-February, I'd say, you're going to see the results of co-creation on a massive scale with the talent, the amazing level of talent that we're drawing together in this group of co-authors who are going to be putting this book together. We've already been seeing some of the stuff that people are putting out. I mean, we already talked about how good your article was, Wendy, but I mean, some of the stuff that's coming through is just amazing. And the people behind these stories that we're collecting have just incredible amounts of talent. I mean, I'm looking in a number of different directions, a number of different ways to engage all of these, you know, expert LOA coaches, not just in the book, but in a variety of other things. So there's another advantage to being a regular subscribed member and having your friends be regular subscribed members. You're going to be seeing and hearing, particularly hearing about stuff over the next few months that's just going to be mind-blowing, because the pool of talent we're accumulating right now, it blows my mind. I can tell you that quite honestly. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, and the very fact that we're all co-authors also means, you know, by default, we're all co-creating.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. That's why I call them all co-authors, because I want them to, I want to make sure they're doing their creation part. You got to all carry your end. Come on, let's go.
Yes.
But it's how you produce really amazing stuff. I don't know if I can convey just how exciting it is doing this. And I'm probably going on about it too much, but I mean, this, I guess you have to actually see the emails as I'm getting from people, and they're introducing themselves, and I'm introducing myself, and they're introducing the team and so forth. Just the quality that comes through in the messages tells me we're really tapping into some high-quality people. So I won't go on and on about it, but I just have to say that much.
Well, I'll just make a side comment that like attracts like, and you're a pretty high-quality individual really high-quality vision. And so I believe the people that you're reaching out to that feel right to you to reach out to, it's because they're a match to that energy.
Well, I'll go one more step then, because I'll tell you what my big motivation is in tying this group together. Obviously, the first and primary motivation is to use it as a way to build up the listenership of the podcast. I mean, that's certainly what I want to do. But I also know there are a lot of really good law of attraction coaches out there. Some of them do very well. Others don't do quite as well. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that they simply aren't known. So I'm trying to basically invent on the fly a marketing method that helps not only promote the podcast, but more importantly, promote the services and careers of the so many excellent coaches out there. Because there are always people who are looking for somebody, who are looking for just the right person to talk to. And I figure the more that we can do to get those coaches, those people out in front of the public so that the public can see, oh, I like this one. Oh, that's the one I want to talk to. You know, that kind of thing. I think everybody's going to benefit in a big way here, because the listeners who decide they want to coach, they're going to benefit hugely. The coaches themselves are going to get more business. They're going to benefit. We're going to benefit because we're going to get more listenership out of the whole thing. It's going to be a win-win-win. So, you know, there's my biggest contribution lately, a different twist on how I do marketing so that everybody wins.
Well, you know, the concept of co-creation really can't be talked about, I think, without talking about how we're all connected.
Good point.
Because connection is such a poignant part of what we're talking about, because it's back to that ripple effect.
Yep.
Every time we have a thought or take an action, it's going to affect somebody else. And because we're all connected, it's kind of like I was thinking about, you know, that movie, The 6 Degrees of Separation?
Yeah.
And even if you don't know the movie, just the concept in itself is what I really wanted to, you know, highlight, is that, you know, even like I love to play with LinkedIn. That's just one of my most favorite social medias.
Mm-hmm.
And it always amazes me how, you know, I have like 2,700 first connections. But in LinkedIn, you can only go three, you can only reach out to three connections. Well, within the three connections, I think I have over 2 billion connections.
Wow.
That to me is like, that's only 3 degrees of separation.
Yeah.
That to me blows my mind.
Well, you think there are 7 billion people on the planet. You've got 2 billion of them. You only need one more degree. 4, you've got everything. To heck with 6. you got it done in 4.
It's just mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. And to me, LinkedIn, it's like as I went from a small number, and you know what? Pardon me, if I might have said it might be 2 million. I get a little bit dazed.
Oh, you got your B's and your M's mixed up? Oh, okay. Well, it's still an impressive number.
But even if it's 2 million, I mean, if you think about it, I only have 2,700 first connections.
Yeah.
That's still a lot.
It is. Of
connections. And I know, like, a girlfriend of mine, she had just started out recently, and she had, like, 20 connections or something like that. And I said, well, you're going to reach out to me. And I said, my connections alone are gold. Because
sure.
I have so many.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, I am connected to a lot of people that have a lot of connections. And on LinkedIn, you can have up to 30,000 first connections.
I'm really falling behind then.
Well, and I know I'm tapped into some people that have about 25,000 first connections. So when I tap into them, I'm tapping into a huge network of people.
Yeah.
And so when you think about the whole earth, and all of humanity working this co-creative dance in this way, it's like in one respect, we're huge and we're vast. And in another, we're getting smaller and smaller because our ability to touch others is becoming easier.
That's a very cool thing. And the fact is that since we are all connected, as you say, and we're not just connected through LinkedIn, we're connected spiritually as well. We are all part of the same fabric. We're part of the same source energy. So we are connected, which can, well, in some cases that can be a little disconcerting because there's some people you wonder, do I really want to be connected to those people over there? But
too bad.
But guess what? You are, and so are we. We're all part of the same fabric. So, you know, deal with it.
You know, over this weekend, in my Facebook news feed, there was this video which I shared with my tribe, and it had to do with connection and how science is starting to, like, recognize how we are all connected in some different ways. And the guy who was talking, I just remember one key point, he was saying how something about how the energy that make up our cells, well, first of all, energy, you know, cannot be created nor can it be destroyed. And so he was saying how, like, every 7 seconds, we have, like, another group of cells that, like, slough off and die.
Mm.
Well, they leave our body, but they're still energy, so they still exist.
Mm-hmm.
And now, who knows if the numbers are really accurate or if I'm remembering this correct, but let's say every 7 seconds you have X number of cells die. Well, simultaneously, you have those cells being refurbished or, you know, recreated.
Yeah.
Well, where did those cells come from? Well, I might have gotten your cells. You might have gotten my cells. You know, the guy at the grocery store, the guy at the gas station. I mean, energy is constantly being replenished and reconstructed it's transmuted and it's changed and whatever. But it's like we're all sharing the same pool. This is my point. We're all sharing the same pool of energy. And
exactly
what was
true.
My energy one day is probably somebody else's energy the next day. Whether you know them or not does not matter.
Nope.
But in that respect alone, that is definitely a link of how we are all connected.
Yes, yes, in a big, big way. In fact, the whole thing about, you know, different people being really, really different and being enemies and so forth, it's laughable on one level. I mean, I understand where they're coming from. I understand the fears that they're experiencing and so forth. But on a spiritual level, it's just laughable. I mean, we're all part of the same fabric. Being enemies doesn't make a whole lot of sense on that level. But I'm not trying to minimize, you know, the stuff that's out there, because obviously there's a lot of, you know, pretty bad stuff that's out there. I'm just saying we don't have to look at it just that way. There is the other side. And the more we look at that other side, more better things happen. More good things happen.
Have you seen those commercials where, I don't know the name of the product, but it's kind of like where people look into what their DNA background represents in terms of all the ethnicities?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And so I love the PR that they're doing or the marketing that they're doing with those commercials because somebody, I want to say this one lady I was looking at, you know, she looked Mexican or Latino, and she said she was shocked because, you know, she was Scottish and she was Russian and she had all these other, why is that word a bugaboo for me? Say it for me.
Ethnicity?
Ethnicity? There we go. She had all these other things within her. And you can tell, and I know it's also in how they do the scripting on it, but you could tell it changes how a person views themselves in relationship to the world.
Mm.
You know, if let's say you had a prejudicial bias against being Asian for whatever reason, but you found out that you were 60% Asian by blood, could that person continue to have a bias against Asian when they find out they are that?
Well, I'd ask the same question if you were 0.06% Asian. Can you still be biased against Asians? I mean, having any amount at all. Because from the point of view of somebody who's got the prejudice going, they don't want to have any of it. It'd be like shameful, you know, to have any
of
it.
True. So I mean, that's why I love that particular commercial set. You know,
yeah.
There's a whole bunch of them with different people. But what I love about them, because I feel like it is so spreading the message of we are all connected.
Yes.
And having any kind of racial bias is really, you know, ignorance may be one word, but it's kind of foolish.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of foolish.
It's pointless, you know? Too, when you really think about it. There's really no point to racism. There's just no point to it at all. I mean, even thinking about it starts to become pointless because ultimately, in the long run, the only way to stop any kind of racial consideration is to stop considering racial. You just stop thinking about people that way. So, you know, anything that helps in that direction is a big step forward, and I think that's one of the things that's coming out of this DNA service that they're providing. It's blurring the lines, and the more we blur the lines, the lines were already blurred, we're just noticing the blurring. But, you know, the more that we notice that blurring, the less it becomes something to even think about, and that's really for the best, I think.
And if you believe that you've been here before and you'll come back again, you've probably been those races that today you don't like. If you have a racial bias, you've probably been every race on the planet.
Could very well be. It wouldn't be surprising. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know not everybody believes that we've been here before and we'll come back again. I do. And, you know, I've considered that. I'm like, well, I came in a very, very pale white female body this time because I have a lot of Scandinavian in me, but I'm like, but who's not to say I don't have every other ethnicity within my life experience?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I grew up in a very white neighborhood that was very biased against everything and everybody that was not white, and yet every time somebody of a different color or race would come through my educational school system, I gravitated toward them. I was enamored. I wanted to understand their culture. And it's like, I think there were only four black people that ever came through my entire 18 years of school. But do you know every one of them was my friend until their fathers transferred and they left?
Oh, nice. Very good.
You know, and then I married somebody who was black.
Ah.
And it made me wonder, I wonder if I've been black.
Or if not,
I mean, I recognize that even though I grew up in a very racially poor community and there was a lot of racial bias going on, I just never felt it. I didn't understand it. It seemed silly to me.
We've only got a minute left, so I'll have to say this briefly, but if you think about the fact that we have two parents and four grandparents and eight great-great-grandparents and so forth, and you take that back 100 generations, the number of people involved is such a large number that it would dwarf any number that comes out of the financial industry. It would dwarf any number that people even deal with on a regular basis. And so the idea that we aren't all connected just genetically is absurd. And I'll just leave it at that because we only have about 27 seconds left. Wendy, it's been a pleasure. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Yeah, we went down some really fascinating roads today. It was fun.
We did. It was fun. And we invite you all back tomorrow as well here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye now.